Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely nothing to the idea that I'm going back to Houston. I've had a hard time keeping tabs on all the MLB trade deadline news here and here hosting the show without Mike here. This is all kind of rushing past me, but I sort of believed him. Silly me. Speaking of Minnesota, joining us right now on the West Her Hotline, you first came to know him and love him as the witty morning show producer here at little old plucky WGR Sports Radio 550. And little did you know at the time that he would go on to become, I'll embellish maybe a little, although maybe you did win awards, award-winning football writer and an author, as well as owner of his own outfit covering the Minnesota Vikings, Purple Insider. It's Matthew Collar on the West Her Hotline, everyone. How'd I do, Matt?
I don't know which awards I won, but I'd like to thank my family and everybody who voted for me for those awards that I was. Things are going great. It's really interesting to be relevant in the National Football League in the lead up to a season. It has truly been a while. I mean, we're talking like since maybe the Vikings signed Kirk Cousins, has there been this much attention? You know, when you see the ESPN cameras show up and NFL Films was there yesterday shooting J.J. McCarthy, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. Because for such a long time, even at this time last year, and I know they won 14 games, but nobody thought Sam Darnold was going to win 14 games. And right. So you didn't see too many national people showing up. You didn't hear too much conversation about the Vikings. And then those Kirk years where they were the definition of another football team in the league, kind of how the Minnesota Twins have been for a long time. Just another, right. Another team out there, you know, they're doing it, they're trying it, but you know, they weren't a team that had Super Bowl aspirations. And now, you have this roster that's stacked. You have a quarterback who has never played before, but they moved on from the guy that you won 14 games with. It's juicy here. It's a lot of fun so far.
How since you mentioned Darnold, I was thinking about this earlier today that if we had time, I'd want to bring it up, but whatever, we'll lead off with it. We know how it ended there. I mean, he won the 14 games, but the last two games, the regular season finale and then the playoff game, were pretty rank. Is there a scenario where they could have, you know, obviously if they would have won and won and gone to the Super Bowl or something, then I would think that he's entrenched and like you're paying him and you're just going to keep going. Was there, you think, out there some sweet spot where he could have played well, not been the reason maybe they lost either of those games and they would have wanted to bring him back? Or did those two games just absolutely submarine any hope?
Those games did submarine hope, but the funny thing is it's kind of quick how we forget. They did offer Sam Darnold the contract to come back and be the quarterback this year, but the issue was that they were just not going to be able to give him enough money on a one-year deal for him to say yes, knowing that if he went somewhere else, that he was going to make $100 million over 3 years. And the other thing is, who would have wanted to be the guy that in week one, if he starts out 2-for-7 passing and they're down 14-3, is going to get booed off the field by his own fans because they're already in love with their version in their head of J.J. McCarthy? And I think Sam Darnold wanted to always use this as a springboard to find a place where he could be, you know, somebody's quarterback that they could really buy into over multiple years, and Seattle decided to do that. So that left the Vikings with the option of basically their franchise tagging him and taking up 40 of their $60 million in cap space on just the quarterback and running out the same team. And I'm guessing they would have had the same results in the playoffs because they would have had too many weaknesses. And so this is really sticking to the plan. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the Vikings GM, he came up with San Francisco. And what's been the San Francisco model? It's been quarterbacks that aren't all that expensive, that can do their job, and absolutely disgusting rosters top to bottom. And that's really what they did. I mean, how many teams ever have won 14 games and then led the NFL in free agent spending? But that's what that's what they were able to do, because they built a three-year plan to get Kirk out, to bring in a quarterback. They targeted 2024 draft class. They knew it was going to be really good. And they also started paying people last year when they signed Jonathan Greenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, Blake Cashman, and then, you know, extensions for Darisaw, extensions for Jefferson. Like, the money was kind of already paid. They didn't have room for a Sam Darnold to win 14 games and then all of a sudden need, you know, a $30 million a year contract. So, you know, this is according to plan, but it's also very bold, because I can't think of any examples of a team winning 14 games and then saying, hey, Sam Darnold, that was great, and we'll catch you later. But I think what the losses did in the playoffs was that they allowed it to be a very easy exit, because if he had played really well and they lost 31-27 or something like that, I think there would have been a lot of debate within the fan base. But once he played like that in the last 2 weeks, it was like, oh, okay, well, it was one of those silly, fun years. And kind of like Kyle Orton, remember that? Like, Kyle Orton, oh, he's retiring? Okay, that's fine.
Yes, I do remember. I remember everything, Matt, at least most days. Yeah, you know, as last year was going on and Darnold was having that season, whenever we would talk about the Vikings, maybe we even had this conversation with you at some point during the season, I'll bet we did, because you are one of our favorites. They drafted McCarthy. The plan is the plan. You got to just ignore what Darnold is doing. And it got harder and harder to keep saying that as the wins piled up. And he was, you know, never in the driver's seat to be the MVP, but he was credibly mentioned as a candidate, and rightfully so. I just never thought extending him would have been a good idea. And frankly, I'm not optimistic for him in Seattle, and I'm counting the days until Jalen Milroe takes his job.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because like, there's been some fortuitous things happening along the way here for the Vikings to get to the place they always dreamed of getting, which was the rookie quarterback contract and the stacked roster that they've spent bazillions of dollars on. Like, just for example, Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles at the exact right time to make sure that they got into the top of the draft to be able to take J.J. McCarthy. If Kirk doesn't tear his Achilles and they go 10-7 and they lose in the first round of the playoffs, then you're talking about having to trade up probably multiple firsts, if you even can, to get J.J. McCarthy. So instead, they just got him. And I think the last two games of the season are kind of a good bounce when it comes to actually competing for a Super Bowl. But there were moments there for sure. I mean, week 17, he plays a game against the Green Bay Packers. It's one of the best quarterback games that I've seen from the Vikings since I moved here in 2016. And I thought after that game, I probably said, I have no idea how you could move on from this guy. After they just won their 14th game, they just crushed the Packers on national TV. He was great. He was in command. And let's not forget, it's not like Sam Darnold was Kyle Orton. I mean, this guy can throw the heck out of the ball. He was a top draft pick. That's how good he was supposed to be. And that's why I kind of think Seattle is such a mid team that they're kind of destined for that with Darnold. But I also wouldn't be shocked if he got them to the playoffs and just continued to be good. Like, I don't think it was a lucky, cartoony, kind of random type of season. But I also think it gave us a lot of confidence in Kevin O'Connell and Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and what a supporting cast can truly do for a quarterback in the NFL. And even though it is bold to go to J.J. McCarthy, now you can do it and say, well, just last year you put in one of the guys who's been one of the worst quarterbacks since he came into the league and won 14 games. So you should be able to make this work.
You would think. Matthew Collar on the Wester Hotline with us here on WGR. Matthew's Purple Insider covering the Vikings. You moved in 2016, you said. Funny, I'm just following a little trail of breadcrumbs here. You leave, the Bills' drought ends. I mean, I don't know. Draw your own conclusions. But Purple Insider's doing great. How is McCarthy so far? Last year you got a camp out of him, but he got hurt pretty early, and it was a lost year. What are the returns so far? Is he making everyone look smart for hitching their wagon to him?
So here's what happens with, you know, when a player plays their absolute best right before they got hurt, that becomes the only version of that player that you know, and that's kind of what happened with J.J. McCarthy, where the 2 or 3 days leading up to the preseason game, he was really fantastic in camp last year. Preseason game, he's just marvelous. Now, it's against the second team of the Las Vegas Raiders, so we're not really talking about Bill Walsh's 49ers here. But still, I mean, he was in command. He was seeing the field well. He was throwing accurately, and there was a great vibe around him, and then he gets hurt. So then that is the superstar, flawless, mm-hmm. wonderful quarterback who needs no more development or anything that people remember. So he arrives at camp this year and starts out really well before they put the pads on. But the Vikings have an absolutely phenomenal defense with Brian Flores, one of the most complex, but also one of the most, you know, veteran, proven, great players. And it's been a bit of a struggle at times for J.J. McCarthy because he's actually not thrown very many footballs in a long time. Like, think about the last ball he threw in a real game, not a preseason game, was December 2023, I believe. It was the last time he threw an actual football in a game, and then he gets hurt, so he misses out on a full year of development. And I think we're really seeing that with some of the accuracy, and he's talked about it. We keep hearing about working on my touch and layering the ball and things like that. But sometimes with this few reps of actually throwing the ball in full speed, you're just going to throw it into the sand sometimes, or you're just going to dirt a ball sometimes, and especially with the amount of pressure that he's facing. So I think we're going to learn a lot about him. It's only been two padded practices. We're going to learn a lot about him in the coming weeks, and I don't think he's going to play a ton of preseason. Kevin O'Connell has never really believed in that. If he does, that would be a red flag for me, actually, if he plays a lot in preseason. Yeah. That would tell me they don't love what they're seeing. But I think that there's probably some people a little nervous in the building. Like, this isn't quite looked as smooth as they wanted to. He hasn't really been super sharp, and he's got to take the next step over the next few weeks, I think, for the confidence. But, I mean, there's no going back. Sam Howell is their backup quarterback. If he plays, it's over. So this is the path. And so it's not like anybody can say, and I think they did this on purpose, it's not like anybody can say, hey, you got Carson Wentz, you might want to put it, like, no. Mm-hmm. You're going to make sure that no one questions this move.
Right. Well, can't Kevin O'Connell make anything work? No, that's the breaking point. Sam Howell is the breaking point, I guess, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I think it was Nick Mullins when they had to play him a couple years ago. That was like, okay, whisper all you want. You're going to have to scream pretty loudly to make that work.
Right. Whisper all you want. I like it. So the rest of it, obviously Jefferson headlines the skill position players. What about the rest of it here? Aaron Jones in the backfield. Jordan Mason comes over after sort of breaking through last year because of the injury to Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco. Like, what's the rest of the roster? You talked like it's stacked. Like it's that good.
I think, and sometimes, you know, when you cover one team all the time, you get the tunnel vision a little bit, so you have to kind of cross-check yourself. So one of the guys that I like to go to is Mike Clay, Vikings, and I think it was the third best offense if you take away his quarterback ranking. I think the only ones that were better were Philly and Detroit, and I would agree with that. There are very few teams that can make an argument that they are as strong top to bottom on offense as the Vikings. Every single thing that got them beat in those last 2 weeks, they fixed. They spent $17 million on a guard. They drafted a guard in the first round. They got a 32-year-old center who has the thickest, strongest hands of any person I've ever shaken hands with. They got a running back who looks like Sean Alexander out there. Jordan Mason is just this kind of behemoth of a guy. He's got some beast mode to him. He averaged 5 yards a carry last year. And, you know, they were able to acquire him in the offseason. So they've really, it's so funny to have a 14-win season and then to make that many acquisitions around. But they really know, like, that, you know, J.J. McCarthy is not Josh Allen. He's not just going to make everybody around him better instantly. He's not just going to run for 800 yards and 14 touchdowns and run over linebackers or something. Like, he's going to need the supporting cast to be as strong as possible. What I'm most curious about is, well, one, Jordan Addison is facing a potential suspension, so we don't know how that's going to go to start the season. And their schedule gets really hard in the middle. So if you miss Addison and, you know, don't get a couple of wins there, you know, that kind of thing, and then it could kind of tumble downhill. But aside from that, I mean, this is a really deep and excellent offense that I think finally has a run game for Kevin O'Connell to use. That's been a main criticism of him since he got here, is that he leans on the quarterback. And that's why it's funny, because there's not a lot of camp storylines. There's just one. It's just the quarterback. Everyone else, you kind of know what they are. And it's, can you do the job here? Because if you're even the 11th best quarterback in the league, this team is going to be playing in the divisional round more likely than not.
You mentioned the free agent spending spree that they went on, and four of those additions are, at least according to the depth chart I'm looking at, look like starters here. Jonathan Allen, Hargrave on the defensive line, corner Rodgers, and then the other corner, Okuda. Is that right? And what sort of upgrades are these players representing to you?
Yeah, no, that is right. I think, I went to the combine and I heard over and over again every executive and coach say, well, did you watch the Super Bowl? We're going to draft a defensive tackle, or we're looking for defensive tackle help, or we need interior pressure. And I think that, this is something that the Bills have done pretty well with at times, by drafting defensive tackles and understanding that if you can create interior pressure, there's really no answer for it. There's so few teams that have been able to do it over the years consistently. I don't think it was a mistake that Aaron Donald's Rams were always really good and nasty, because, I mean, it's instant. There's no, like, sidestepping it, stepping up in the pocket when you can get it. And last year, the Vikings were just severely missing interior pressure, actually for a few years. And that was another thing that what the Rams loss really helped them do was diagnose themselves and look in the mirror and say, we couldn't pressure Matthew Stafford up the middle. And when Matthew Stafford can sit there, he is going to rip you apart. Even if you get some pressure off the edge, he'll just step up in the pocket. Jared Goff, he'll just step up in the pocket and do the same thing. And with the cornerback group, I think that's the one that gets talked about a lot. I wondered if they would go after Jalen Ramsey, considering, Brian Flores' Miami connection. I don't know if they crossed. I think they did cross paths. So, but they're kind of hoping that some guys take the next step. But I think their theory is if you pressure the quarterback on 50% of the plays, that the cornerbacks are going to do pretty well for themselves. But if there is one question about the defense, it's probably that. And it's also that they face the Ravens and they also face the Eagles this year. So can you stop the run? Because last year they had run-stopping defensive tackles, but now they have pass-rushing defensive tackles. But that all kind of feels a little nitpicky when you have a top-to-bottom defense with as much star talent on it as this does.
Matthew Koller from Purple Insider in Minneapolis on the Western Hotline for just another couple of minutes. The division, Matthew, has gotten pretty interesting here. I mean, the Lions still look personnel-wise great, but they did lose both coordinators to head coaching jobs, one of them in division, Ben Johnson in Chicago, Aaron Glenn, of course, off to New York. Like, the Packers have been a certain level of good. I don't know about Super Bowl contender yet, but still a good team. And now the Bears, they got a lot of talent on that offense. If Caleb Williams can, we'll talk about quarterback whisperers here, Ben Johnson, do your thing. It's pretty stacked.
It is, and I keep trying to find different ways to talk about the NFC North because it is so interesting, but also the storylines are just so clear for every team. Did the Detroit Lions miss their shot? Remember, it was 2 years ago after that. Okay, you remember everything, but for the audience, if you folks remember when Dan Campbell said after they lost and they botched that fourth down, when he said, hey, you never know if that was our only chance to get here. And I think when someone like Frank Ragnow, who maybe your audience doesn't know that well, but the center of the Detroit Lions is one of the best players in football, nobody's replacing him. And I think he's been one of the most valuable players for the Detroit Lions. He's the one that sorted out Brian Flores' blitzes over these last couple of years, and I think that's a huge loss. The coordinator thing, there's a good example of something similar with Atlanta when they went to the Super Bowl, and then they hired somebody else, and it was okay, but it wasn't the same. The Eagles hired the wrong guy before they got to Kellen Moore. It wasn't the same. So that is very unclear there, but they're still stacked. And then I think we all sort of know what the Packers are at this point. I think the Packers are probably the most boring team in the NFL. Like, okay, they're going to be good. They're not going to be great. That's it. That's the end of the opinion. Right. They just don't have enough superstar talent. Like, they don't have Reggie White and, or James Lofton or something. They've just got a bunch of B-plus players that I think, and a B-plus quarterback that will all be okay, competitive, and they'll win 9 games or 10 games, and that will be that. And then there's the total wild card with Chicago. When I see that, you know, stories of Ben Johnson screaming at Caleb Williams and taking him off the field for mistakes, I think, oh, a psycho, just like with, you know, Josh McDaniels or, you know, some of these offensive guys that are great at being in a room and drawing up on a chalkboard something. But then when you're asked to manage people, they turn into Nurse Ratched. So, like, we'll see on that. I'm really not sure if he's going to be able to handle managing an entire franchise or not. And I've also been kind of the, you know, I'm the doubter side of Caleb Williams. I thought everyone called him a generational talent so many times, but that doesn't mean it's actually true. And like the guy has flaws, and we'll have to see, but I'm not buying the Bears yet. They got to prove it.
That's a very good point about, you know, managing the entire company on Ben Johnson. Because, like, I think the way a lot of that – it depends, I guess, on how you're wired, maybe even how – if you played sports, how you were coached and what worked for you. I think a lot of people would read on Twitter accounts of Ben Johnson flipping out at him and pulling him aside and going, yeah, tough love. That'll work. But – you know, it's the 21st century. That does not always work, you know? So I'm really curious to see how that goes.
Well, I also thought it was really funny because the juxtaposition, like, so one thing I've been doing, I've been live streaming now because it's 2025. And so I take video to use little videos on my live stream. And one of them had Kevin O'Connell showing Justin Jefferson that he could juggle. And so he's like juggling a football and a tennis ball and stuff. And that's on the video. And like, that's where the Vikings are at with Kevin O'Connell in training camp. And Ben Johnson has just taken a sledgehammer to the helmet of Caleb Williams for missing a read. Like, I'm thinking of, what is it, Will Ferrell in one of the movies throwing a chair and saying, nobody panic. Like, that's what seems to be happening there. I don't know if it's that. It's so much that, like, yeah, no one ever really wanted to be screamed at to be coached. But I also think Caleb specifically has never had somebody who is acting like this, and not everybody can fight through and respond to that. So I don't know how that's going to actually work.
Matthew Collar, author of Football is a Numbers Game. If it hasn't won awards, it did get just positive reviews from everyone who's anyone who covers the NFL. I know that much just from having eyeballs on a Twitter account. Covers the Vikings, Purple Insider. Just find you on Twitter and find the content. That's the deal.
Yeah, that'll work if you type in Purple Insider pretty much anywhere. You can see Kevin O'Connell maybe juggle at practice if you watch the live stream.
That sounds great. Sloan's doing great, I see, still, right? WNBA play-by-play. Like, you guys smacked it out of the park moving to Minneapolis when you did, I think.
Absolutely perfect for her and her career, for sure, and she's doing Big Ten Network as well. But the Minnesota Lynx, man, the team nobody wants to talk about, best team in the WNBA, so we got them too.
Do they hate Caitlin Clark too? All right, sorry.
No, God, don't even start. Don't even start. It's the worst.
All right, Matt. Really great visiting with you. Best to your wife, and thanks a lot for the time, man. We'll hit you up again, I'm sure, once the season gets here.
Yeah, thanks, man. See you later.
That's our dude, Matthew Collar, morning show producer here at WGR, went to Minneapolis. The company he was working for fired him, and he started his own thing and has never looked back. So doing great out there, and we appreciate his time. And the book is excellent, by the way.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
No, for real, I remembered. I got to do the contest here. I know. Just what a moment. Right now, we want you to be caller 5 and 6. We got a couple of pairs of tickets for you. 716-221-4947 is the number to get yourself a pair of tickets to the Buffalo Bisons home game coming up this Saturday, 6:35 p.m., celebrating Women in Sports Night. Plus, there will be a post-game drone show. Callers 5 and 6 are going to get those pair of Bisons tickets to go enjoy that Saturday evening. If you don't win the tickets and are interested in purchasing your own, you can visit MILB.com for tickets to buy. Or, you know, listen tomorrow. Maybe we'll give away more. I don't know how that works. Maybe. Anyway, glad to have you with us here on this Thursday. Mike Shope is away for the entirety of next week as well. So we got time to stretch out and hang out and, you know, get to know each other. And that sounds stupid. 803-0550 is the phone number if you would like to get in on any part of the conversation that we've been having today. A lot of football content, obviously. Hall of Fame game goes tonight. No, I'm not going to pick the game. But we've got the Lions. The Lions and the Chargers. And yesterday at this time, I think we were talking about the potential of this game to be a little more interesting because of who we thought the starting quarterbacks were going to be. I think I only learned today that the Lions are ruining our fun. Nothing against Kyle Allen, but I liked Hendon Hooker in college a lot at Tennessee. I don't recall seeing him at Virginia Tech, which is where he was before he went to Tennessee. I was kind of into him back when we still weren't sure if Jared Goff. I'm being kind to myself with when we weren't sure. I wasn't sure Jared Goff was really going to work out long-term in Detroit, and they drafted Hendon Hooker. I thought, like, that's a guy that could develop. I like that guy, right? Just kind of crushed on him in college. You know, just good runner, not great, good, like 600 yards maybe peak rushing when he was at Tennessee, but liked the guy as a prospect and was excited to see him play starting this game against Trey Lance for the Chargers. And there's been no change on the Charger end of things. We expect Trey Lance to start the game, but I heard Kyle Allen in the update just now, and I had heard that earlier today. And I'm bummed out. I mean, probably no matter what was going to happen, even with Hendon Hooker playing, I'm someone who will get excited. Oh, it's 8 o'clock. All right, it's time. Football. Oh, 8:15. What am I doing? Why am I? Is there anything on Netflix? Maybe I should finish watching Quarterback. Just get me out of here. It's a preseason ritual for me to be excited. You know, cause it's the guy. It's Tirico and Collinsworth. It's the show, right? Like, here it is. Like, oh, no, not really. But I liked Lance and Hooker being the starters. I thought that would keep my attention. I don't know that I'm going to be as heavily invested in Kyle Allen. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe Hooker will be playing in the second half when Brent Musburger gets to be in the booth. I heard Zach earlier this morning talking about that being something that could keep him watching this game a little bit longer, because being the college football fanatic that he is, hearing and seeing Brent Musburger in an NFL booth, albeit in the preseason, will be pretty cool. Musburger is a part of this class going in to the Hall of Fame. You know, the Hall of Fame game itself coming around, and of course, induction weekend is this weekend. I think Saturday is the ceremony. It kind of got me thinking about the Bills and the Hall of Fame. And we had a great run of people representing the Bills from the teams in the 90s. And, like, I don't know. Like, the Tasker thing is always going to be out there. And, like, I would say I'm far from indifferent about it. I just don't know how optimistic you'd want to get about it. It's been so many years. Like, I guess it's possible maybe one of these years he makes it through, and I would love that for him if he got it, but I don't know if there's anyone else really left. Daryl Talley, that's another one that I just don't hear any real, outside of like super fans of the Bills, all right, talking about Talley as a candidate. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but at this point, I would say I would be pleasantly surprised if he, you know, got momentum behind him for eventual induction into Canton. And I was thinking about this on the way in today. The current crop of players, right? I don't know if there's anyone. I mean, we're talking about the drought era. It doesn't mean there weren't really good or even great players on the team at some of these times, but I don't think there's anyone between the 90s teams and now. Reuben Brown might be the best name for that because of all the Pro Bowls, but I feel like that maybe would have happened already if it were going to happen. And I think the world of Ruben, and knew him pretty well off the field. I haven't talked to him in many, many years now, but did a radio show with him way back in the day, and always enjoyed being around him and talking with him. So I'd be pulling for that. But again, that doesn't seem real likely. And then thinking about this current crop of guys, like aside from Josh Allen, is there anybody that strikes you as like on a path that is going to end up there? Like even Deion Dawkins might be the first name. He's been here since 2017 now, and he's been an excellent player at left tackle, but he's not like he's not at the top of the class, you know? So I don't know. The thing about it is, if they win one or more, then everything gets elevated, right? Like, I think if the Bills were to win the Super Bowl this year, and then, I mean, I don't want to get greedy and go back-to-back, right? But if they win more than one here, say before Dawkins is done playing, which is certainly conceivable with the talent they've got and the quarterback that they've got, then I think Dawkins, and he's here the whole time. He's Josh Allen's blindside protector. And they win one, and then maybe win another one, then I think you might get somewhere. I mean, he's a popular enough player. I think a good person within the league. Like, I think he's a popular player because of his personality.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Reality, but it's one of these guys, I think, that they need to win maybe more than one for him to elevate to that status. Then after him, I mean, I don't even know. Like the current team, right? I saw someone. No, it wasn't that. Sorry, I'm distracting myself. The next guy I thought of, maybe I was just too focused on the offensive line. But honestly, I'm hearing some talk about like Osiris Torrence, sort of highest paid guard in the league type potential, or like, you know, very much a top of the market rate contract eventually. And that's another one. Like, if they do some winning here and he gets that notoriety that comes with deserving to be paid like that, then, but it's, I mean, we're 2 years in. It's just so early. But honestly, the rest of it, I just don't even think there's a candidate. Like, if Trey White never gets hurt and, you know, mixes in the odd all-pro here or there, there's a candidate. But that didn't happen. He got hurt. He eventually got cut. Now he's back. Like, that's a tough one. I don't think there's anyone else. I might be missing someone. This might be something we can talk about more in the future, even tomorrow after the Hall of Fame game. Another timeout is already at hand. I am the Bulldog. This is WGR.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.